Krishna consciousness, Hindu cult, or divine culture. There is a misconception that the Krishna consciousness movement represents the Hindu religion. In fact, however, Krishna consciousness is in no way a faith or religion that seeks to defeat other faiths or religions. And I was mentioning this recently here, but I don't know which program I was mentioning. Rather, it is an essential cultural movement for the entire human society and does not consider any particular sectarian faith. The cultural movement is especially meant to educate people in how they can love God. Sometimes Indians, both inside and outside of India, think that we are preaching the Hindu religion, but actually we are not. One will not find the word Hindu in the Bhagavad Gita. Indeed, there is no such word as Hindu in the entire Vedic literature. This word has been introduced by the Muslims from provinces next to India, such as Afghanistan, Baluchistan, and Persia. There is a river called Sindhu bordering the northern western provinces of India. And since the Muslims there could not pronounce Sindhu properly, they instead called the river Hindu. And the inhabitants of this tract of land, they called Hindus. In India, according to Vedic language, the Europeans are called Malechas or Yavanas. Similarly, Hindu is a name given by the Muslims. India's actual culture is described in the Bhagavad Gita, where it is stated that according to the different qualities or modes of nature, there are different types of men who are generally classified into four social orders and four spiritual orders. This system of social and spiritual division is known as Varnashram Dharma. The four Varnas, or social orders, are Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra. The four ashrams, or spiritual orders, are Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas. The Varnashrama system is described in the Vedic scriptures known as the Puranas. The goal of this institution of Vedic culture is to educate every man for advancement in knowledge of Krishna or God. That is the entire Vedic program. When Lord Chaitanya talked with the great devotee Ramananda Rai, the Lord asked him, "What is the basic principle of human life?" Ramananda Rai answered that human civilization begins when Varnashram Dharma is accepted. Before coming to the standard of Varnashram Dharma, there is no question of human civilization. Therefore, the Krishna consciousness movement is trying to establish this right system of human civilization, which is known as Krishna consciousness or Daiva Varnashram, divine culture. And Prabhupada said prior to his departing that half of his work was done. And this part, establishing Daiva Varnashram, he said that was not done. In India, the Varnashram system has now been taken in a perverted way, and thus a man born in the family of a Brahmin, the highest social order, claims that he should be accepted as a Brahmin. But this claim is not accepted by the Shastra or scripture. One's forefather may have been a Brahmin according to Gotra or the family hereditary order, but real Varnashram Dharma is based on the factual quality one has attained regardless of birth or heredity. Therefore, we are not preaching the present-day system of the Hindus, especially those who are under the influence of Shankaracharya. For Shankaracharya taught that the Absolute Truth is impersonal, and thus he indirectly denied the existence of God. Shankaracharya's mission was special. he appeared to reestablish the Vedic influence after the influence of Buddhism. Because Buddhism was patronized by Emperor Ashoka 2600 years ago, the Buddhist religion practically pervaded all of India. According to the Vedic literature, Buddha was an incarnation of Krishna who had a special power and who appeared for a special purpose. His system of thought or faith was accepted widely, but Buddha rejected the authority of the Vedas. While Buddhism was spreading, the Vedic culture was stopped both in India and other places. Therefore, since Shankaracharya's only aim was to drive away Buddha's system of philosophy, he introduced a system called Mayavad. Strictly speaking, Mayavad philosophy is atheism, for if it is a process in which one imagines that there is God. This Mayavad system of philosophy has been existing since time immemorial. The present Indian system of religion or culture is based on the Mayavad philosophy of Shankaracharya, which is a compromise with Buddhist philosophy. According to Mayavad philosophy, there actually is no God, or if God exists, he is impersonal and all-pervading, and therefore can be imagined in any form. The conclusion is not in accord with the Vedic literature. That literature names many demigods who are worshipped for different purposes, but in every case, the Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead, Vishnu, is accepted as the supreme controller. That is real Vedic culture. The philosophy of Krishna consciousness does not deny the existence of God and the demigods, but Mayavad philosophy denies both. It maintains that neither the demigods nor God exists. For the Mayavadis, ultimately all is jiro. They say that one may imagine any authority, whether Vishnu, Durga, Lord Shiva, or the sun god, because there are the demigods generally worshipped in society. But the Mayavad philosophy does not, in fact, accept the existence of any of them. The Mayavadis say that because one cannot concentrate one's mind on the impersonal Brahman, one may imagine any of these forms. This is a new system called Panchopasana, and it was introduced by Shankaracharya. But the Bhagavad Gita does not teach any such doctrines, and therefore they are not authoritative. The Bhagavad Gita accepts the existence of the demigods. The demigods are described in the Vedas, and one cannot deny their existence, but they are not to be understood or worshipped according to the way of Shankaracharya. The worship of the demigods is rejected in the Bhagavad Gita. The Gita clearly says, Kamaistaistai hrita jnana prapadyante anya devata tang tang niyamam asthaya prakritya niyata swaya. Those whose minds are distorted by material desires surrender unto demigods and follow the particular rules and regulations of worship according to their own natures. Furthermore, in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna states, Bhogaishvarya prasaktanam taya paritta chetasam viyavasayatmika buddhi samadhau na vadhiyate. In the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence, and who are bewildered by such things, the resolute determination for devotional service does not take place. Those who are pursuing the various demigods have been described as hrita jnana, which means those who have lost their sense. This is also further explained in Bhagavad Gita. Antavattu palang dejam tad bhavat yalpa medasam devan deva yajo yanti madbhakta yanti mam api. Men of small intelligence worship the demigods, and their fruits are limited and temporary. Those who worship the demigods go to the planets of the demigods, but my devotees reach my supreme abode. And that's by the way, this verse Prabhupada uses to debunk the Mayavadis who say the demigods don't exist. Prabhupada would say, well, then why is Krishna saying those who worship demigods go to the demigods? Right there, it's debunked. Krishna says the demigods exist. You know more than Krishna? The rewards given by the demigods are temporary because any material facility must act in connection with the temporary body. Whatever material facilities one gets, whether by modern scientific methods or by deriving benedictions from the demigods, will be finished with the body, but spiritual advancement will never be finished. People should not think that we are preaching a sectarian religion. No, we are simply preaching how to love God. And I mentioned that, I don't know where, but I know I mentioned that, because that's why I joined this movement. So Shankaracharya is actually Lord Shiva. And in the Puranas, there is this statement by Lord Narayan to Lord Shiva that I want you to appear in Kali Yuga and concoct a philosophy. So, but the purpose was, he already explained it, Buddhism had taken over all of India. The way Buddha did that, because why did Buddha do that? Because everybody was needlessly killing animals. And the Brahmins were saying it's authorized in the Vedas. So the Brahmins had become corrupt. So people were needlessly killing animals, eating meat. So Krishna was compassionate. I got to first of all stop this animal slaughter. So the only way he could do it, Krishna came as Buddha and said, don't follow the Vedas. Follow me, become Shanti, Ahimsa, Paramo Dharma. That nonviolence is the supreme religion. The only purpose was to get everyone to stop killing animals. So Buddhism spread all over China, all over so far. Well, before Buddhism, you still had, you know, Maharaj Parikshit and Janamejaya. You had, you know, the Vedic culture. But as because it's Kali Yuga, things started to become contaminated. The Brahmins were not being as Brahminical as they should, and they started to become influenced by making money and interpreting the scriptures to make it a business.
And killing animals, you mean
sacrificing.
Sacrifice,
I don't know exactly the details. But the Brahmins were, yes, there are recommendations if you must eat meat in the Vedas. But that the regulation was once in a month. But now it turned into, it just became a big thing. So it became too much. So Krishna had to step in, because we know when the principles of religion deteriorate, I have to descend somewhere or other to reestablish. Otherwise, the place goes to hell quickly. And it was the beginning of Kali Yuga. So Buddhism was established. Now, but Krishna can't leave it like that, where there's no God, there's no soul. Okay, everybody's not, they're not killing animals. So the next step was Shiva comes in the form of Shankaracharya and reestablishes the authority of the Vedas. But the way to do that is he had to concoct a philosophy, your God. Your God, and you simply forgot. That's all. Now you do meditation and you remember that you're God, and that makes it very attractive. If everyone can become God, okay, great. So now, but now at least because he used the Vedas in his own twisted way, concocted way, but at least he established the authority of the Vedas. But that can't stay like that. Then Lord Chaitanya comes and defeats and establishes. Yes. Okay? Shall we continue? Okay. People should not think. Oh, yeah. People should not think that we are preaching a sectarian religion. No. We are simply preaching how to love God. There are many theories about the existence of God. The atheist, for example, will never believe in God. Atheists like Professor Jacques Monod, who won the Nobel Prize, declare that everything is chance, a theory already put forward long ago by atheistic philosophers of India such as Charvaka. Then other philosophies such as the Karma Mimamsa philosophy accept that if one goes on doing his work nicely and honestly, automatically the result will come without need for one to refer to God. For evidence, the proponents of such theories cite the argument that if one is diseased with an infection and takes medicine to counteract it, the disease will be neutralized. But our argument in this connection is that even if one gives a man the best medicine, he still may die. The results are not always predictable. Therefore, there is a higher authority, Daiva Netrena, a supreme director. Otherwise, how is it that the son of a rich and pious man becomes a hippie in the street, or that a man who works very hard and becomes rich is told by his doctor, "Now you may not eat any food, but only barley water"? The Karma Mimamsa theory holds that the world is going on without the supreme direction of God. Such philosophies say that everything takes place by lust, kama hoitukam. That's from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 16. By lust, a man becomes attracted to a woman, and by chance, there is sex, and the woman becomes pregnant. There's actually no plan to make the woman pregnant, but by a natural sequence, when a man and woman unite, a result is produced. The atheistic theory, which is described in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, is asurak, or demonic. It is actually, everything is going on in this way because of chance and resulting from natural attraction. This demoniac theory supports the idea that if one wants to avoid children, he may use a contraceptive method. Actually, however, there is a great plan for everything, the Vedic plan. The Vedic literature gives directions regarding how men and women should unite, how they should beget children, and what the purpose of sex life is. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that sex life is sanctioned by the Vedic order, or sex life under the direction of the Vedic rules and regulations is bona fide and acceptable to him. But chance sex life is not acceptable. If by chance one is sexually attracted and there are children, they are called varna sankara, unwanted population. That is the way of the lower animals. It is not acceptable for humans. For humans, there is a plan. We cannot accept the theory that there is no plan for human life or that everything is born of chance and material necessity. Shankaracharya's theory that there is no God and that one can go on with his work and imagine God in any form just to keep peace and tranquility in society is also more or less based on this idea of chance and necessity. Our way, however, which is completely different, is based on authority. It is this divine varnashram dharma that Krishna recommends, not the caste system as it is understood today. This modern caste system is now condemned in India also, and it should be condemned, for the classification of different types of men according to birth is not the Vedic or divine caste system. There are many classes of men in society. Some men are engineers, some are medical practitioners, Some are chemists, tradesmen, businessmen, and so on. These varieties of classes are not to be determined by birth, however, but by quality. No such thing as caste by birth system is sanctioned by the Vedic literature, nor do we accept it. We have nothing to do with the caste system, which is also at present being rejected by the public in India. Rather, we give everyone the chance to become a Brahmin and thus attain the highest status of life. Because at the present moment there is a scarcity of Brahmins, spiritual guides, and Kshatriyas, administrative men, and because the entire world is being ruled by Shudras, or men of the manual laborer class, there are many discrepancies in society. It is to mitigate all these discrepancies that we have taken to this Krishna consciousness movement. If the Brahmana class is actually reestablished, the other orders of social well-being will automatically follow. Just as when the brain is perfectly in order, the other parts of the body, such as the arms, the belly, and the legs, will all act very nicely. The ultimate goal of this movement is to educate people in how to love God. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu approves the conclusion that the highest perfection of human life is to learn how to love God. The Krishna consciousness movement has nothing to do with the Hindu religion or any system of religion. Here's your point. Listen to this. No Christian gentleman will be interested in changing his faith from Christian to Hindu. Similarly, no Hindu gentleman of culture will be ready to change to the Christian faith. Such changing is for men who have no particular social status. But everyone will be interested in understanding the philosophy and science of God and taking it seriously. One should clearly understand that the Krishna consciousness movement is not preaching the so-called Hindu religion. We are giving a spiritual culture that can solve all the problems of life, and therefore it is being accepted all over the world. So this last bit, that's how I should preach. We're not trying to convert anybody. We just want, as it says here, everyone will be interested in understanding the philosophy and science of God. The original sin was envy of God. After that, I'm envious of everything else. Now, if I say I love everything, but I don't love God, there's going to be a miscalculation. So everything begins with first loving God, and then you'll know how to love everything else in the proper proportion. For instance, I may think I love my wife, I love my family, but the best way is first establish my love for God. Now I will see my wife and my children in the right perspective. Otherwise, without God, I may think I love my wife and children, but it may be very, very self-centered because it's not going to have the right perspective.